The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I am your host. It is Wednesday, January 6th. That means we are just mere days away from NFL playoff football starting six games in total. It also means it's a...
Wow, that came in strong today.
Sorry.
That was strong. That was awesome.
You're operating out of the Fantasy Football Today podcast studios, right?
That's right. Yeah. I only come in here whenever they kick me out of the main studio due to COVID protocols and because it's Pete Prisco. You know, Pete, because of seniority, given that he's closer to the Grim Reaper than I am, he always gets precedence over everyone else as far as going in the main studio. Now, he claims that he hates coming in the studio because he likes there being more camaraderie, more people on at the same time. But I think it's a lie. I think it's because he's lazy.
At the risk of, you know, I'm just going to tell you some things I've been hearing about Pete lately. One, I didn't hear this. He claimed that once we were sort of a little more in the clear in terms of being able to come into the office, that he would be staying home more often anyway, because that's just how it was going to be. And we told him, no, Pete, ain't happening. You're coming in the office. You claim you're the star of HQ. That's his words, not mine.
That is his words. He has always claimed that Pete Prisco is the star of CBS Sports HQ. I've even heard him sometimes drop the HQ. Just said CBS
yes,
Sports.
Star of CBS Sports.
I was like, well, Romo might have something to say about that, but I mean, Pete, if you really think you're the star, go ahead, man.
Yeah. Like you're maybe the star of CBSSports.com/NFL/writers/Pete-Prisco, but that's probably it, pal. And then I also have heard there's a discussion that amongst people in the office, and I, you know, people, maybe there are people.
Some would say people, the office is buzzing.
The office is buzzing. Yeah. That's sort of the phrase I heard, that the office is buzzing right now. Yeah. That Pete, in the height of playoff season, where it's, you gotta like, where true stars get ready to shine their brightest, that Pete is turning down work left and right, outright refusing to work, whether it's podcast, video, whether it's lunch meetings with prospective advertisers, just various things bandied about. And, you know, you got to question whether, you know, he wants to be here or not, you know, whether he has it, the passion, the fire in his belly, if you will, Brady.
Yeah. I mean, almost like he's turning them down to try to, you know, secure a draft pick or something like the Philadelphia Eagles presumably did. Yeah. You know, everyone's kind of assuming that's what they were doing out there. Who knows? But, it's a little bit worrisome for me. I'm worried about the old guy. You know, we've done plenty of shows together. I think he may be going crazy. It's not too different from any other year, but he's becoming really forgetful too. Like a lot of times we do our picks on Wednesdays together. He keeps thinking he got a bunch right. And Will, as you would attest to this, you finished strong at the end of the season. He did not. He fell apart.
He was like, look, I went 9-5-1 again. It's like, no, you went 4-11-1 or whatever it was.
Yeah, no, he did not have a good finish to the season. I think he's confused with some of his picks.
It would be borderline negligent for our bosses not to at least get him tested for some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
not just COVID, but a lot of things.
Right. I mean, we're all here for Pete's mental health. I hope that people look into it. Anyway, COVID, by the way, in the feed, we have a ranking. We rank the head coach vacancies on a show recapping Black Monday.
That's, by the way, that's so original because I did the exact same thing on radio today.
I mean, what are you?
What was your number one?
I had the Chargers number one, actually.
Okay. Who was two then?
Jaguars. I was really 1A.
I had him flipped just because I think general manager, from what I may know about what's being offered, you know, you got complete autonomy as the head coach if you're going to Jacksonville. So. Oh. That's pretty powerful, I think, for a lot of head coaches, right?
Well, maybe we'll have to talk about that. In fact, you know, one of the things that I said, I think I had to, because I think, Wilson had the Jaguars one. I mean, they're really, really close. I think I was almost deferring to the fact that, Justin Herbert like I'm as high on Trevor Lawrence as you can possibly be. I think he's going to be awesome, but well, Justin Herbert has a year's worth of tape.
Sure.
And that makes a difference. Like,
sure.
You know, he's really good.
And I think the counter to that would be this, and not saying that Trevor Lawrence can go in and is going to do what Justin Herbert did his rookie year. The counter to that would have been, yeah, he had a great rookie year. He beat Baker Mayfield's touchdown record, but like, look at how Baker Mayfield was then viewed after his second year.
Great point.
And even in his third. So you got to be careful about just even using that one tape as your basis for it. I think he's definitely a piece of why it's the second best opening, in my opinion. I think as a head coach that's coming into it, you want flexibility, right? And you might be saying to yourself, you know, I want to win now. And maybe there's a veteran guy that's out there that you want to take a chance on. You know, I have it hard to believe that Jacksonville's not going to take Trevor Lawrence, or whoever head coach gets there isn't going to take Trevor Lawrence. But you'd think that with all the draft picks that they have, the cap space, some of the young pieces they do have, and even that division, right? Like Philip Rivers is going to be retiring at some point. Okay. I don't know if the Colts are going to be able to find the next guy. The Texans to me is a good job just because of Watson. But outside of that, there's not a ton I really like about that. I'm not sure the Tennessee Titans will be able to maintain this kind of consistently high level of play. I think that division you could kind of flip and turn around pretty quick.
Now, that is actually, I was wrong. So people who listen to the podcast every day are probably like, Brinson, Pete's not the one who has mental issues. You are. It was Wilson and I who had the Chargers first, and Breach who had the Jaguars first. And Breach's logic was, in fact, the division. Like, yep. And it's a great point. I mean,
You have to bang your head up against basically Bama if you're a college football fan, right? Like the Auburn job. Who's going to want that?
Right.
I don't know, but anyone who wants to have to play Nick Saban. Well, now you got to play Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes twice a year, right? And the Broncos, they've had four losing seasons. I don't know the last time that happened in their history. I think they're going to turn some things around too. They'll make some moves this offseason. And then obviously the Raiders, I think they're just a good defense away from being a playoff team.
Yeah, it's a much, much, much better division than the AFC South. So that's totally fair. And I do want to ask you about that. You mentioned the autonomy thing. Because we'll get into the head coaching stuff in a minute, maybe like in a deeper thing. But I'm curious about the Jaguar stuff. Do you think that whoever is the head coach, see, this is my suggestion too, is that it would depend a little bit on what coach I was. So let's say hypothetically that I'm Brian Daboll and I take the Jaguars job. I'm guessing that Shad Khan is going to hire somebody to be my boss. Maybe he's willing to let me find somebody I like to work with, but you know, Shad Khan mentioned that he's going to have final say, et cetera, which is a little concerning. I think, however, if I were, let's say, I don't know, a two-time college football national championship winning coach, and I decided to go to Jacksonville.
If you're a friend of Urban, he actually won three, so you're shorter than one.
But, oh, you're right. Urban Meyer did win three, two at Florida. My bad. But my cousin, Buck, was at Florida for four national titles.
Bucky was?
Buck.
Buck?
Jamie. Nobody, he didn't like me.
No, we call him Bucky.
My grandmother refused to the day she died to call him Buck.
Yeah.
I'm not calling him Buck.
You should tell everyone, the listeners, how he got that name. I'll go ahead and tell for you. When he was a young kid, though, he had these two buck teeth that came in, and it just kind of stuck. They looked at him and said, hey, Buck, you know, big, buck teeth. They're sticking out like you wouldn't believe. Big, that's how I got the nickname.
Big North Florida hunters, basically South Georgia. Anyway, if Urban Meyer came to Jacksonville, I would presume that he would be able to do whatever he wanted from a roster and GM hiring perspective.
Well, I'll first answer that question by asking you this. What's the structure in Buffalo? Is it Sean McDermott or is it Brandon Bean?
I think Sean McDermott hired Brandon Bean.
Exactly.
Yes.
So if I'm Brian Daboll and I'm going in there first, I think I would then be saying, like, whoever the general manager comes in is going to be working under me, because I need to ensure that whatever players he's supplying me fit within my vision for our team. They can, you know, understand the technique and scheme we need to play with, and also the character. Like, there's some coaches that they're willing to make more, I don't want to say excuses, but they're willing to kind of bend some of the rules to deal with the more talented, you know, high caliber players. There's other coaches who aren't, and they're like, this is how it is. I don't want to deal with any other BS. And so you need a general manager that can understand if they're going to draft a guy who's got some baggage, whether or not their head coach, how he's going to deal with that, how the staff's going to deal with that, especially when you're starting out trying to change the culture of a place that hasn't been really successful of late. So I think in either instance, personally, I would always say the head coach needs to have the ultimate power. Because look, you're ultimately graded on what happens on the field. And so if the general manager isn't aligned and there's some backstabbing, other stuff going on, he could take this thing in a heartbeat. And so I think if you're an owner, you really need to make sure that if you're reading the press clippings, that's all based on how you perform on the field. Well, then you need to give the guy who's ultimately in charge of that, especially on game day, the ability to be able to choose who's helping him build that roster and build that team.
Yeah. And it's interesting how these hiring cycles work, because now to 2017, you've got to know Sean McVay, or be somewhere, being a bright young offensive mind who worked around or near Sean McVay. That was the hot new thing, or what it was in 2018 too. And now in 2021, everybody wants a CEO type. And I think these owners, I understand this, they're just buzzword happy, and I get it. The GMs and the teams and the PR people and all that. I don't think they're that far off, but to me, you mentioned the Buffalo setup, and I think the same setup is true in Seattle when Pete Carroll was hired and then he brought John Schneider in. Hey, listen, we are working together, but I am going to call the final shot. Same thing with McDermott and Bean. To me, that's the best setup. And yeah, you got to have two guys who are good at it, but they work hand in hand and you're rowing the boat in the same direction. Like, it's not that hard of a concept to figure out in business, but for whatever reason, these football teams just can't ever get it right.
Well, that's one of the reasons why when we do the ranking for the jobs that are opening, I like Jacksonville better, because that's still open. Not that I like Tom Telesco. I think he does a really good job, but ultimately
hiring his third head coach now, by the way, that's
right. And so there's something to be said for that. And look, I think Anthony Lynn was a good coach. He didn't handle some of the time management things well, and I think that caught up to him in a bad season. But they've been snake bitten too with injuries and whatnot, but we won't get into that. I think the interesting thing about when you talked about a CEO versus what was it a few years ago, like that young offensive mind, is you still get that. Like, I think a lot of it's based on, like, look at the conversation for, all right, the Chargers want to interview Jason Garrett. Why? Well, they want an offensive mind who did a good job with Dak Prescott, who I don't think he ever had a losing season as a head coach with the Dallas Cowboys. And so I don't know that you're looking at him and just saying, well, he's a CEO type. You're more looking and saying, we have Justin Herbert. We want to make sure we help him play to the max of his ability and help him achieve at a high level. Then we feel like we'll be successful. That's why Brian Daboll is getting an opportunity, because of what he's done with Josh Allen. And same thing with Eric Bieniemy, because they think he's had a piece of that with Kansas City. When you start looking at the discussion of an Urban Meyer, or even like Ryan Day's name was thrown out there too, I think that more stems from like watching how Matt Rhule's handled things in Carolina, or even just Cliff Kingsbury, where you could probably draw him to both and saying, well, in part, he's a Sean McVay guy, or Sean McVay was going to hire him, whatever. And he's this young offensive mind, but he also was a guy that was in charge of that roster. And so I think for a lot of people out there who, there was reports saying that Urban Meyer wants $12 million. And I don't know if that was substantiated or not, right? Like, you can make the case that Urban Meyer could easily say, like, hey, you're paying Matt Rhule $9 million.
Sure.
All right. I've won 3 national championships. So do this. Give me 9 and give me another million for every national championship that I won at the college level that he didn't. It gets us to 12. And by the way, I would also argue that if you look at the way the pay increase and the structure has worked for every player, like the way it's inflated over time versus coaches is drastically different. So like, it's not that, like when John Gruden got paid $100 million for the 10-year deal, I wasn't sitting there saying, so be it. I mean, you at times have other guys who don't provide as much value for a team getting paid $10 million, right? A backup quarterback who might never play getting paid $10 million. And meanwhile, your head coach is getting paid less than that. So it's 100% justifiable for the money, mind you.
And it doesn't count against your salary cap.
No.
And so up for coaches, always spend up for coaches.
100%. And so like, I didn't balk at that figure at all. It's like, no, it makes sense. Yeah. And then you give him $1 million for each national championship he's won, more than Matt Rhule. Makes sense.
I was just here for Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk writing an article about it. And then Ian Rappaport of NFL Media, like the next morning, sending out a tweet that was not so, thin. It was not so thin. It was thinly veiled.
Well, let me do this, because I think there's two ways of looking at this. I think one, if that was the initial ask, or hey, like, what would that price be? And that was out there. There's two ways of looking at it. Either you come from the team perspective where you want to put that out there because it kind of ends up being a bad look if someone's asking for that much, right? And so it looks greedy. It looks whatever it looks. And so I think it's a negotiating tactic for the team if they happen to leak that out. Now, the other side is you could be saying, well, they're going to, they want to beat down expectations, where I don't know where that number came from if you're representing Urban Meyer. So we want to make sure that we're not, you know, feeding into some unrealistic expectation that we can get him paid that. Like, both those things could be true, could be at play. We ultimately won't know. The only thing that ultimately really drives up value is competition.
Sure.
And so if Urban Meyer's interviewing for the LA Chargers job as well as Jacksonville, now you got a little bit of a bidding war. And that's where that number gets to 10, 11, 12 million. And you might say, well, he's never coached in the NFL, so what guarantees him any success? Well, I would argue, what guarantees any head coach success in the NFL, right? Like, John Gruden's in his second stint now, and he's 3 years into it, and like, how much success have they had of late? You know, versus a first-time head coach in Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan, whatever. So I don't know that you're basing it off of like, well, where was he at before, and like, why does he justify to get paid that? He's paid the value that the market's willing to pay him, and if he gets paid $12 million, so be it. Here are some reasons, though, where I feel like the college head coach makes sense for the NFL. The average age of the NFL player now has gone down. It's different than what it was 10, 20 years ago, okay? People need to get on board with that because the way the draft salary pool has worked and the way it's cut out the middle class. So it's younger players you're dealing with that are more accustomed to like what they had in college. I think a lot of how college operates now is more of like a professional organization anyway now. And so it's not that big of a transition when you look at what these guys are, how they're running a college organization and how they're being asked to run an NFL organization now, especially the top programs like in Ohio State. So that makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. He's going to be one of the better talent evaluators. If your roster in college is built on the talent which you can recruit, and ultimately you're not in charge of where those guys go. You give your best pitch and then you hope they pick you. In the NFL, you actually get to choose those guys. So when it's your draft pick, it's free agency. Both of which the Jacksonville Jaguars have plenty of picks and cap space. You're probably going to be better, have better knowledge on the background of a lot of these other players that are coming out and understand their strengths, weaknesses in picking them, especially early on. That's also a feather in the cap for, I think, any college head coach. And then the last thing is, like you talked about, if indeed you are looking for like a CEO type, you know, you're going to be hard pressed to find a figure that's able to A, deal with a bunch of players, more so twice the amount almost of an NFL or an NFL roster, sure. Right? I mean, you've got a ton more between scholarship players, walk-ons and all that. And then on top of that, you're over top of everything. I mean, you're
also just dealing with boosters and
everything. Boosters and budgets and fundraising and you're dealing with like an indoor facility that you're trying to, you know, remodel or make or what you're doing, right? Into the sports science of all that. So there's all these different ways which you're being pulled different directions, kind of similar to a head coach. In fact, you can make the case that maybe a head coach in the NFL, as much as they're pulled different, they don't have to recruit. Like after they sign a 2021 class, they're not going, okay, 2022, 2023. Like,
right.
That's not a college head coach has to deal with. So I would make the case that like, I think they're actually a great fit for an NFL franchise. It's just because of how like Steve Spurrier worked out or even Nick Saban, which I think if Nick Saban came to the NFL now, he could be successful. But I think with because of how those two worked out, people have kind of looked the other way, but like, look at Pete Carroll, you know, look at some of the other guys like Cliff Kingsbury's had relative success for how fast.
But Chip Kelly went to the playoffs 2 years in a row. I mean,
yeah.
Until he got
20 wins in the first 2 years. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, I think people who are like scoffing at that number, if that ends up being it, or just the idea of like, you know, there's risk there. Yeah, there's risk with any head coach you hire, but I actually think you could make the case that a guy who's been a college head coach is probably better equipped to be a head coach in the NFL than a coordinator who's never done that.
I agree with that. I think that really gets undersold a lot when you talk about a coordinator becoming a head coach. Like it's a different job. You're not becoming a super coordinator. You're becoming a guy who is dealing with, you're becoming somebody who needs to be a CEO, like management type. I mean, that's what you're doing. You know, when a coordinator, you're drawing up game plans and you're giving it to your boss to say, hey, here's what we're going to do. And you're working with a specific side of the football. And you're not doing, I mean, you are doing that to a degree as head coach, but you're managing so, so much more.
Right.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Brady will tell us, would he have punched Doug Peterson in the face if he'd been pulled off for Nate Sudfeld? We'll find out next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so the Eagles, it's this is Wednesday when we're when people are listening to this. It's Tuesday when we recorded it. The Eagles thing, the Doug Peterson stuff, the tank gate, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, still buzzing on Tuesday. I think that's to be expected. Wednesday is sort of the turn the corner day, Wednesday, Thursday in the NFL. I think Thursday, I guess, once you get to the playoffs. So hopefully this is all behind us. I don't think the NFL is going to launch some investigation. I'm curious your thoughts on what would your reaction have been if you were Jalen Hurts, and are you surprised to see some of the fallout from this?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been on both sides of this. I've been a starter in a game where I've gotten pulled. I've been a backup that's gone in. And so look, if you're Jalen Hurts, look, he didn't play well. He didn't play well the week before. He didn't play well in that game. Like, people are going to be like, oh, he had two rushing touchdowns. Okay. But he didn't even run the football all that great, and he wasn't throwing the football well. So I'm not advocating for why Doug Peterson made the move. I'm just saying, like, it's understandable if you throw a pick and you're not really able to be too efficient in the passing game and things aren't working and you're at the end of a game down by three. You might want to say, all right, let's give this other guy a spark who, at least in his career, when he's gotten in games, has looked all right in Nate Sudfeld. So there is that argument to be made. And if you're Nate Sudfeld, look, you're stoked. You get an opportunity to play. Like, you've been working your entire season for this chance, this opportunity. And so now it's your chance to go in and win the football game. And so, like, the idea on the outside, like, well, they put him in because they wanted to lose. Do you think Nate Sudfeld's thinking that? Like, he's like, oh, coach put me in because he doesn't want to win this game. He's thinking, no, I'm going to light this thing on fire. Like, I'm going to go and show everyone why I deserve to be a starter, how I can go, you know, have a job next year in the NFL, whether on the Eagles or somewhere else. So it bothers me to hear this whole narrative that's written by, no offense, like, a lot of writers, people on the outside who haven't been in that spot, because, sure, like, it even stinks for me to hear, like, the teammates are, oh, the teammates are mad they pulled Jalen Hurts, right? That was the narrative. You know what they should have been mad about, all right? You should have been mad when you found out Carson Wentz was inactive when they announced the inactives before the game. Because newsflash for all the veterans, let's say the scenario played out this way. If Hurts got hurt in the game and then Sudfeld went in, would you be second-guessing it then? No, because you're saying, well, it was a necessity, he had to go.
You might be second-guessing Jalen Hurts getting injured in a meaningless game.
Which is fair, even though you want to see what you have in him. But my whole point is this. If that scenario played out, wouldn't you be then second-guessing, saying, wait, We want to win this football game, but we have a healthy scratch in Carson Wentz, who we feel like is a better quarterback than Nate Sudfeld? Like, you should have been asking that question if you're Jason Kelce when you saw that he was inactive for the game before the game even started. And you could have said to the coach, so what happens if Jalen gets hurt or if he plays bad and we want to spark? You're not going to put Carson in? You're not going to do that? Well, then sit me out too for this game. If you're not in this to win it, then sit me out too. Before we go into this, I'm going to put my body and everything on the line if you're not serious about winning this football game. If this is all about next year, and if you're a veteran player and feel that way, I don't have any problem with it. But you can't after the fact go, well, now we're mad they pulled Jalen Hurts. Well, dude, what were you thinking before the game? Like, did you not think that was a potential possibility? I mean, that's what doesn't make any sense to me with all this, is there's outrage about it, yet the writing was on the wall. You know the inactive list before the game.
Miles Sanders, Carson Wentz, Fletcher Cox. Like, if you wanted to win the game, you chopped those guys out there. So yeah. I saw
Miles Sanders was quoted as they were upset they pulled Jalen Hurts. And it's like, well, okay, like, what do you care, man? Like, right. That's the other thing of it is, like, for when you're a team, right? Like, and I remember going through this. Like, I remember, I think we played, it was in 2012. Matt Cassel had just driven us down the field. I think versus the Cincinnati Bengals in Kansas City for a field goal. And look, we didn't do much offensively at that point in time. We were a bad football team that year, but they literally benched him at halftime. And I remember going over to my locker with him, and I just looked at him. I go, this is effed up. I was like, you haven't done anything wrong. It's not you.
Yeah.
And now I've got to go into this. And the last thing you want as a quarterback in that spot is for your teammates to be like, well, I'm not trying to win this game now. You know, I mean, like, that's the last thing. That's a terrible culture. And you could blame Doug. You could say it's on Doug Peterson for making the switch or putting them in this situation, but it's the NFL, dude. Like, your contract is to go out there and play to the best of your ability every right. single game, regardless of what decision that coach makes. Like, coaches make bad calls all the time, and you have to figure out a way to make
it. A whole year of them. I mean,
right. So that's what bothers me about it is, like, there's all this outrage about what happened in the fourth quarter and then the decision to go for it on fourth down, which, if I'm not mistaken, the analytics actually point to that was what you should do in that scenario. So
it was weird. Here's my thing, and I'd be curious if you think this is real too, and I think you sort of referenced it there, but first of all, we knew Nate Sudfeld and John McMullen, I think of CSN Philly, had reported that, or said that Jalen Hurts admitted after Sunday's game he knew Nate Sudfeld was coming in. We'd heard it reported in the media. I know Mike Garofalo tweeted about it before the game. He was there at the game, that Sudfeld was going to play some. Doug Peterson pointed out that Sudfeld has been there for 4 years, has been in the room. There's a good chance he's not back because they got Carson Wentz, they got Jalen Hurts. I mean, who knows?
Well, okay, hold on for a second. But how do you know that? And we're so, not, like, when here's the thing is that I talked to Chris Mortensen, I talked to other people, and you know, Chris was vehemently denied that. He's like, that's not what this is about. They wanted the tank for the draft pick and all that. And I'll just defend it in saying this. Like, because he's like, well, he's been there for 4 years, and what they have. No, they don't. He threw 24 passes, I think, in his NFL career.
No, but when I said with the four years, what I meant was I think Doug Peterson's throwing him a bone to get some tape out there.
Well, that's part of it. But even then, like, Chris Mortensen also talked about them saying, look, they're moving on from Carson Wentz. Like, he goes, there's a 0-10% chance that Wentz is back there next year. So if that's the case, I might be saying to myself, all right, like, I get to see Jalen Hurts for three quarters. I've seen him for three games besides that. We have an idea of what he is, and we'll find out more in the offseason. But with Nate Sudfeld, like, we've only seen him throw 24 passes. Like, why don't I put him in a scenario where Jalen, who runs a lot, let's say he gets hurt in the future. If we're moving forward and Jalen's our quarterback, like, don't we need to see what we have in a backup in Sudfeld if he's going to be that guy to be able to go in the fourth quarter of a game and get us a win? Like, haven't we seen the backup quarterback actually be really important to Philadelphia in the past to maybe help them win a Super Bowl? So, I'm not saying that was the motivation behind it or the plan. It sounds like it kind of was. And even if they were, like, they're like, all right, well, we're not going to make winning this game a priority, which at that point, it wasn't.
Who cares?
But who cares?
Yeah.
Because at that point in time, like, it's more about the future. It's more about figuring out what you have. Now, look, if you want to blame Doug Peterson for not communicating that to the rest of the players in the team, or you're worried about them not playing hard, if you're worried about communicating honestly with players and they don't go out and play hard, that's on them. Because if they want to risk going out and putting out a crappy, you know, game film out there, that's on them to see if they get cut or, you know, someone signs them next year. Look, maybe Doug Peterson's at fault for that decision or how it looks, whatever the case may be, but they're trying to figure out what they have in their roster for the future. And that's the position that the Eagles are in, given that the postseason's not in their future.
Yeah. And look, some of the blame's on the NFL. You prioritized this game. You knew the Eagles had nothing to play for. I understand that Washington was the only team completely unaffected by anyone else. And this game, it was the island game that you could put on, but you had to realize that Philly might not play everybody. In fact, by Tuesday or Wednesday, they announced everybody was ruled out when Washington was a 3-point favorite and the line shut up. Like, when they said no Fletcher Cox, no Miles Sanders, no all these dudes, then you had to realize they weren't the idea that, I don't know. I can't get
no,
all.
No, but that's the thing why I don't understand the outrage then. It's like, well, he didn't play the starters anyway. And so you feel like they tanked in the game when, like, they made that decision before the game. Like, again, going back to the Carson Wentz, like, if you had said, hey, we didn't want to make him active because we're worried about him getting hurt and not being tradable in the offseason, which very well could be the case. Like, if that's the case, then, like, why is there any outrage from players?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, if you are a veteran and you disagree with the way they went about handling it, then go talk to the coach and then you should be out too. Like, it baffles me that it's gotten this much run.
It's like the score. And the situation with the Giants is all that mattered. Like, if it's 30-0, Washington, no one's batting an eye if Nate Sudfeld comes in. Right. You know?
Well, but I'll put it this way too.
It's not Doug Peterson's job to uphold the integrity of the NFL and win a division title for the Giants. That's not his job. His job is to evaluate his own roster and try to win football games next year.
I'll put it this way. I remember being in a game, it was late in the season, 2012, that Kansas City Chiefs team. We were not good that year. But there was, you know, there was a time when they were like, hey, we want you to, if you get this one-on-one matchup, throw to this guy. Not because I felt more comfortable with him, you know, going downfield or like if it was press man-to-man taking a shot.
Press man coverage, right?
Well, that was essentially what they were saying.
Yeah.
And so what happened when we got there on the field? I didn't do it because I knew he wasn't going to win. And I threw to the other guy that I knew could win. We got a PI and put us down around the goal line. And so, you know, I come off the field, I'm getting yelled at because they're like, hey, we want you to throw to this guy. Well, it's like, well, what's the priority here? Because that actually helped us have a chance of scoring. This other side's not. And I don't need to sit there and go, I've been around them all year and I know I'm in a tough position right now for myself personally, but also for a team trying to get a win in a football game.
Yeah, but you also put your own person. I mean, not your health at risk, but I mean, like your future. Like you might. What if you throw?
No, I got hit by three guys. Literally, it was like I remember in that game at one point there was like three guys who converged on me, and I remember it was one of the harder hits I ever took. But I don't remember it because I was probably concussed, and then it was been like my third of that season,
jeez.
And then also because I think it was like three different people. So it never compares to like the Kevin Williams for the Minnesota Vikings hit that I took in 2009 when I like didn't even know I got hit for like 5 seconds after the fact. It was so quick and so vicious, I digress. It goes back to the point, like there's been situations like that where you're going, what the hell's going on? But now in that instance, I didn't trust it, but in other instances, you kind of had to buy into it and say, okay, I'm going to throw this up and give it a chance. Now, again, it didn't work out, you know, the way that, you know, with that team or that year and all that, but that stuff happens a lot more than people realize. So it's surprising that it's getting so much run right now in the media. Especially considering, like, I think the more interesting thing that I took just from my conversations is the fact that how Carson Wentz and the Eagles, how it's gotten so bad so quick.
It's like, crazy, dude.
Think about the rise of Carson Wentz in Philly. First three games, they had week four, they had the bye. They're calling it Wentzylvania because he didn't play that preseason.
Yeah.
And then so he goes on this meteoric rise where he could have probably won governor of Pennsylvania. And then since then, it's like,
but then he has the MVP. Then the next year in 2017, he's the MVP front runner 3 quarters of the way through the year.
Yeah.
Harris gets hurt. And
it's wow. Just, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah. They got to this point so fast.
Is it his head? Do you think it's, I mean, I'm not asking you to play like armchair psychologist here, but I mean, it's in his head, right?
When they drafted Jalen Hurts, it was in his head.
Or when Nick Foles won the Super Bowl.
I know that too. I mean, because there's a statue up there somewhere, right? I mean,
he walks by a Nick Foles statue every day on the way to work.
Like, that's a tough reminder, man. Like, there's a lot of resentment there. Like, you could be happy for someone else, but let's be real, man. Like, that's going to eat at you every single day. Because as a quarterback, you're thinking that could be me.
I have a question that I don't know if you'll, I think you'll answer honestly, but yeah. I don't know. Let's say you're Carson Wentz and you're playing on your other Browns and you're the MVP 3 quarters of the way through the season. You tear your ACL and Nick Foles comes in and you're standing on the sidelines of the Super Bowl. What are you thinking, man, this would be so great if this guy wins a Super Bowl for my team? Or are you kind of like,
no, 100%. You're like, I could be doing this too. You really do.
So I was talking about this with some friends the other day. I think that Carson Wentz, because he is by all accounts like a really, really good person, right?
Right.
I think he might have some like post-traumatic guilt thing going on where he was thinking in his head, like he's forcing himself to think like, I want my team to win, but like secretly was like.
I mean, look, you could be a good person and a good teammate.
Sure.
That doesn't mean you don't think that you could have been the guy to do the same thing or that you, I don't want to say deserve that because I feel that sounds entitled. But there's definitely that, like, I worked my entire life for this. I suffer a torn ACL. Now some other guy is taking over my chance to be the Super Bowl MVP and win a Super Bowl. Like, it's human nature to go through those thoughts. You know, it's human nature to go through that. And I think the quarterback position is the one that battles that the most. And the hard thing is off of that next year, then there started to become questions. And what happened is, like, I feel like when I watched Carson Wentz this year is, he lost all confidence. Like when you're a quarterback and you hold on that football, there are days where you feel like it's on a string. Meaning when I throw the football, I'm controlling everywhere it goes. I can hit whatever I want. I felt like there was times watching him this year where you felt like he let go of the football and he had no confidence in where it was going. And it's a terrible feeling to have. It really is.
Sure.
It's honestly, and that's why like when you chalk it up to saying, always lost his confidence. Most people on the outside go, well, that's not real. Like, come on. It can't be that simple.
It's not bravado. It's like, it manifests itself physically in how you perform.
But it's not even that. People think it's more complicated than that. And to a degree, it is in one way, but in summarizing it, it can be that simple. Like, it can be that simple for someone who is so good at their position, right? They're one of, 32, 64, however many quarterbacks you want to talk about in the NFL, where when they lose that confidence, the ability to be able to perform at a high level like that, that's what it looks like. We see the yips in baseball sometimes.
Golf.
There's that golf. There's that mental block and there's that, mental, shot that you take when you lose your confidence. And for quarterbacks, like, it can be a delicate thing and it can be really hard to get back.
Yeah. And I mean, that may be why at this point, they have the Foles thing and you're working past it and then Foles is gone, but then they draft Hurts. And so you're not only is your confidence already, teetering, but then then your own team like erodes it even further by drafting the quarterback.
Like, I would make this argument. I think the interesting thing is, like, they sign you to an extension because it's been a little bit on the part of the Eagles and Howie Roseman too with how he handled it. Like, yeah. Let's just look at this. They move on from Foles. They give you a long-term contract. You play last year, arguably some really good football with zero help, right? Yeah. And so you have to be thinking to yourself, like, all right, like, they're going to build around me in the offseason and continue to help us kind of get this thing back together. And instead they send a second-round pick on another quarterback. Like, it is a little bit confusing. Like, it is a little bit like, well, what is going on? Like, so do you miss Foles? Like, is there something going on here where, like, I'm not good enough for you? Like, there is probably some of that thought process going through his head.
Well, and, it's like, it would be weird. I mean, they tell you, like, hey, you're our guy, and then do that to you instead of drafting more help. I'm with you. All right, the Browns, we'll hit the Browns real quick. Because the Browns on Tuesday, it was announced that head coach Kevin Stefanski, he has tested positive. It's not even a close contact. It's that they just said he's tested positive with COVID. He is going to miss the game. By all accounts, the NFL is throwing a big at the Browns and saying tough loss. And Joel Bitonio, the all pro offensive lineman, also out for the game as a result of a COVID test. I mean, what do you make of this situation? Because this feels so, so tough for a Browns team that for 24 to 36 hours got to celebrate finally getting back to the playoffs for the first time in a really long time. And now it's almost like the rug has been yanked out.
Yeah. So like, I think as a Browns fan, and I can relate to that growing up a Browns fan, this is one of those like, oh great. It's been 18 years. We get here. And now this happens, right? Like there is some of that. Like I remember the 10-6 year, even in some of those games, like down the stretch, whether they're close, whether we won or lost, there was like, you could feel it, like the sense that we were going to lose. Like they're just like, here we go again. Right. Yep. And so there definitely is some of that thought from the Browns fans. So I would just say this. I try to be optimistic about it. As a player, I think there's a few things that you can look at and say this, last week they dealt with, these issues with COVID and the facility being closed, they really couldn't prepare. And look, they were out some guys and even though they were playing a bunch of backups for Pittsburgh, they still won the game, right? Without being able to practice much. So it's the same opponent. You got their starters now, which look again, the scheme, the personnel, that's a good thing. Like this could be a team that you never played this year or maybe only played once. And maybe it's a little bit more difficult to prepare, but it's a team you're very familiar with. You've already been able to beat them basically without as much prep, even though it was some of their backups. So I think there still should be some confidence that comes from that. Stefanski being out during the week, I think would normally hurt them, but they're not practicing anyway right now. And he could be a part of it as Zoom meetings. And so I would have said if their facility was open, like that would be a pretty big loss because even though you could prepare Van Pelt to call the game, not having him there with you all the time is really where like the coach gets paid for what they do. It's preparing their team mentally, physically, emotionally for that game. By the time you get to the game, like if this news came out on Friday, I'd be like, hey, he's in the barn. Like outside of managing the game, which you can kind of get anyone to do that for the most part. The play calling is going to be one thing, but for the most part, like you've got a pretty good idea of what you're going to do with your game plan and what adjustments you might be able to make. So that's not as big of a loss. Bitonio's tough, but again, it's early in the week. And so you'd say, all right, like at least they know and the guy knows who's going to replace him coming in. he's got more time to prepare mentally, physically, and all that too, when they can get back to practice. So I try to look at the bright side of it. I think they can still compete. It just comes down to like in-game adjustments. If that ends up being an issue for Van Pelt, that's one thing to keep an eye on. Like, not to use college NFL as a comparison, but you look at the semifinal game because Tony Elliott couldn't call plays. Yeah. I thought that was one of the worst called games
for
Clemson since Trevor Lawrence has been there. It was terrible.
Awful.
And I hate to put that on Brandon Streeter, but I'm sorry. Like, he might have been involved in some of the play calling. He ain't calling it like Tony Elliott did. That was terrible.
In hindsight, I would have taken Ohio State. I mean, I know that's easy, but like, I had Clemson big, and Tony Elliott is a huge difference maker. Also, Ohio State, I saw this thread somebody put up. I'm not exactly sure who, but it was on Twitter. Ohio State was really, I mean, like, they kind of pants Brent Venables. Like, they were.
Right. Well, you know, they used some up-tempo stuff. There's a whole conversation about signal stealing and all that. And I don't want to like talk too much about college, but the reality is like, and Fields played his arguably his best game of his college career.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you kind of pick a moment to have your best game plan, your best career game.
Sean Watson style, you know?
Yeah. And Trevor Lawrence, just with the game plan they gave him, was hard for him to compete with what Ohio State was doing. But again, it's an example of, you get into the game plan, you might need to change things drastically, right? And say, hey, remember this, what we did all week?
Yeah.
Throwing that out the window. I'm going with something else. It's hard to do that if it's not Stefanski, when he's the one that's, you know, really been calling the plays, you know, all year. So that's going to be the tough part for him.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, the line went away at Steelers minus 5. Do you know what it came back on as?
What?
6.5. I mean, the head coach and an all-pro offensive lineman are out. Maybe they already knew this was kind of coming because it opened at 3.5 and moved up to 5. I was thinking,
again, I think it's just early enough where, one, you can put out that line. There might be still some movement between now and then.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they put it back out with getting more clarification the next 24 hours. Like, is the spread done, or are we going to get more players who are going to be missing?
I mean, so, I would, if it were me, I mean, I was thinking, you know, when it was 5 and the news is announced, you hammer 5 and then you hope it comes back as like 10. And you hit the plus 10 and you have a 5-point window, which, you know, with key NFL numbers. But what do I know? Clearly nothing. Okay. That's it. That's the show. Awesome stuff. Really compelling stuff on Philly and Carson Wentz's headspace as well. Brady, as always, fun to talk to you. Next time we talk, it'll be, in between the playoff rounds. We need to talk playoff football. Well, a little bit.
We will next week.
We will. Thanks, buddy. See you, man. See you.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got
it. Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.